Here is the detailed podcast transcript for the episode on the paper scoping review. Potential harm from school-based group mental health interventions. Welcome to the Science Dialogues, where we dive deep into the latest cutting-edge research. I'm your host, Tom.
And I'm Jen. On today's episode, we'll be exploring a fascinating scoping review that investigated potential harms from school-based mental health interventions. This is a really important and underexplored topic, so we're excited to unpack the key findings with you.
That's right, Jen. The paper is titled Scoping Review: Potential Harm from School-Based Group Mental Health Interventions, and it was authored by Carolina Guzman-Holst, Rowan Streckfuss-Davis, Jack L. Andrews, and Lucy Foulkes from the University of Oxford.
The researchers set out to systematically map the existing evidence on whether school-based mental health interventions that use cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, and or mindfulness techniques can actually lead to negative outcomes for some students. This is really counterintuitive, as we generally think of these kinds of programs as beneficial for young people's well-being.
Exactly. The researchers reviewed over 30 years of literature, covering 112 different school-based mental health interventions that aim to reduce internalizing symptoms like depression and anxiety, or improve overall well-being. And what they found was quite surprising. 10 out of those 112 interventions, so about 9%, actually reported at least one negative outcome.
That's a significant proportion, especially given how prevalent these types of school programs have become. The negative outcomes ranged from increases in symptoms of depression, anxiety, and emotional problems, to decreases in well-being, prosocial behavior, and mindfulness skills.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder. If nearly 1 in 10 of these interventions are causing harm, even if it's just for a subset of students, then we need to understand why that is and how we can prevent it. The researchers dove into that in their analysis.
Absolutely. One of their key findings was that negative outcomes were more common in certain subgroups of students. For example, they found that young people deemed high risk for mental health problems, as well as males, younger children, and those experiencing socioeconomic deprivation, were more likely to experience worsening of symptoms or well-being after the interventions.
That's a really important insight. It suggests that the one-size-fits-all approach of universal school-based programs may not be appropriate. Different students seem to respond very differently, and some may actually be harmed by these general interventions.
Exactly. The researchers theorize that for more vulnerable students, the content of these programs, whether it's the CBT techniques or the mindfulness exercises, may actually increase their awareness of their own negative thoughts and feelings, without giving them the adequate coping skills to deal with that. So in a sense, it backfires.
That makes a lot of sense. And interestingly, the authors found that the studies that were of higher methodological quality, with lower risks of bias, were actually more likely to report these negative outcomes. So it's not just a case of shoddy research. Even the most rigorous evaluations are finding potential harms in some cases.
Right, which is quite concerning. The researchers also looked at whether these school programs were leading to any specific adverse events, like self-harm or hospitalization. Surprisingly, only 3 out of the 112 interventions even reported on adverse events, and those that did found they were not related to the intervention itself.
That's an interesting finding. It suggests that researchers may not be paying close enough attention to potential harms and adverse events in these trials. If they're not even being systematically recorded and reported, then we could be missing important safety signals.
Absolutely. The authors really emphasize the need for future research to dig deeper into the mechanisms underlying these negative outcomes. Why are certain students more vulnerable? What is it about the content or delivery of these programs that can backfire? And how can we identify and mitigate those risks up front?
Great point. The authors propose a few potential explanations, like the interventions increasing students' awareness of negative thoughts and emotions without giving them the tools to manage them effectively, or the programs potentially leading students to compare themselves unfavorably to their peers, reducing empathy and prosocial behavior.
Those are really fascinating hypotheses. It highlights how complex the psychological impacts of these programs can be. Simply making students more aware of their mental health, without the right support, could paradoxically worsen their symptoms in some cases.
Definitely, and the authors emphasize that we need a much more nuanced, individualized approach to school-based mental health interventions, rather than assuming a one-size-fits-all universal program will work for everyone. Triaging students into different intervention pathways based on their baseline needs and risks could be a more effective strategy.
That's a great point. Rather than delivering the same generic program to all students, we may need to tailor the intensity and content of interventions based on each student's unique circumstances and vulnerabilities. The authors call this a proportionate universalism approach, where support is still offered to all, but the level of intervention is matched to the level of need.
Exactly. And the authors highlight that this is an area that hasn't been well explored yet in the school mental health intervention literature. Most studies have focused on average effects across entire student populations. But understanding and addressing those individual differences is clearly crucial, especially when it comes to preventing potential harms.
Absolutely. This scoping review really underscores the importance of looking beyond just the positive outcomes of these programs, and rigorously investigating the potential downsides as well. Mental health interventions, even well-intentioned ones, can have unintended negative consequences if we don't understand the nuances of how different students respond.
Couldn't agree more, Jen. This is such an important and eye-opening piece of research. It challenges us to rethink how we approach school-based mental health support, and to be much more attuned to the possibility of harm, even if it's just for certain subgroups of students. There's clearly still a lot of work to be done to make these programs as safe and effective as possible.
Absolutely. This is a critical topic that deserves much deeper exploration. The authors have laid an important foundation, but there are so many fascinating questions left to investigate. I'm really excited to see where this line of research goes in the future, and how it can inform more thoughtful, tailored approaches to supporting young people's mental health in school settings.
Me too, Jen. This has been a fascinating dive into some complex but vital issues. Thanks for joining me today. I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot about the potential pitfalls, as well as the promise, of school-based mental health interventions.
Absolutely, Tom. It's been a pleasure. Until next time, happy listening, everyone.
Commercial jingle plays. Are your students struggling with their mental health after school-based group therapy?
Introducing personalized coping strategies, the only solution designed to meet the unique needs of each individual student.
Unlike one-size-fits-all mental health programs, our team of expert psychologists will craft a tailored coping toolkit just for you.
From mindfulness exercises to cognitive behavioral techniques, we'll equip your students with the precise skills they need to manage their emotions and thrive.
No more cookie-cutter interventions that could actually make things worse. With personalized coping strategies, we guarantee positive outcomes or your money back.
So don't settle for risky, generic mental health support. Call 1-800-COPE now to get a free assessment and personalized plan for your school today.
Personalized coping strategies, mental health support as unique as the students you serve. Commercial jingle fades out. Here is a detailed podcast transcript about the research paper Machine Bias. Generative large language models have a worldview of their own. Welcome to the Inquiry Podcast, where we dive deep into the latest scientific discoveries. I'm Tom, and joining me as always is my co-host, Jen.
Hi everyone. Today we're discussing a fascinating new paper that's shaking up the field of artificial intelligence. The title is Machine Bias. Generative large language models have a worldview of their own, and it was written by a team of researchers from France and Sweden.
This paper tackles a crucial question that's been quietly debated in the research community. Can we use these powerful AI language models, like GPT-3 and ChatGPT, as substitutes for human subjects in our studies? The promise is huge. We could run experiments, conduct surveys, and gather data at a fraction of the cost and time compared to traditional methods.
Exactly. Some researchers have already published studies showing these AI models can closely mimic human behavior, decision-making, and even moral reasoning. They argue these silicon samples could revolutionize fields like psychology, economics, and political science.
But as you mentioned, this new paper takes a very different view. The authors argue that while these language models may seem human-like on the surface, they actually have a distinct worldview that's fundamentally different from real people. Let's dive into their research and findings.
The core of the study is a targeted experiment looking at how well these AI models can predict people's survey responses and opinions. The researchers used prompts to get the models to generate answers to various questionnaires, then compared those responses to real data from human participants.
And what they found really challenges the existing optimism around using AI as a replacement for human subjects. The models did not simply mimic the diversity of human views and attitudes. Instead, the researchers observed what they call a machine bias. The AI responses were remarkably consistent, with very low variance, and did not align well with any particular social group.
In other words, the models weren't accurately representing the full range of human perspectives. Nor were they biased towards certain demographics, like previous studies on algorithmic bias have shown. The bias seemed to stem from the fundamental nature of these large language models themselves.
The authors argue this machine bias is a more concerning issue than the social biases that have been the focus of past AI criticism. Because even if we could control for demographic factors, these models still exhibit a systematic divergence from real human attitudes and behaviors.
That's a really intriguing and counterintuitive finding. I'm curious to hear more about how the researchers arrived at this conclusion. Can you walk us through the details of their experimental approach and analysis?
Absolutely. The study spanned several countries and used multiple different large language models, including GPT-3 and GPT-Neo. The researchers carefully prompted the models to generate responses to a variety of survey questions on topics like politics, values, and consumer preferences.
And what metrics did they use to evaluate how well the AI responses matched up with the real human data?
They looked at a few key measures. First, they calculated the correlation between the model's predictions and the actual survey results. This gave them a sense of how well the AI was matching the overall patterns in the human data. But they also went a step further and developed a novel technique to test for different types of biases. They looked at how the model's errors were distributed. Was there a systematic tendency to over- or underpredict certain social groups? Or was the error more random and unrelated to demographics?
That's a really clever approach. It allowed them to dig deeper than just looking at the overall accuracy. So what did they find when they applied this bias analysis?
That's where things get really interesting. The researchers found that the models did exhibit a clear bias, but it wasn't the kind of social bias that has been the focus of previous AI criticism. Rather, they describe it as a machine bias. The errors were highly consistent, with very little variation, and not clearly linked to any particular demographic factors.
Fascinating. So the models weren't simply favoring certain social groups over others. There was something more fundamental about the way they were generating responses that didn't align with real human views and opinions.
Exactly. The authors argue this machine bias stems from the nature of these large language models themselves. Despite being trained on massive amounts of human-generated text, the models have developed their own distinct worldview that doesn't fully capture the nuance and diversity of actual human perspectives.
That's a really intriguing and counterintuitive finding. It really challenges the notion that we can use these AI systems as direct replacements for human subjects in research. So what are the implications of this work? How might it shape the ongoing debate about the role of AI in the social sciences?
I think this study is a critical reality check on the hype and optimism around using generative AI for human subject research. The authors make a strong case that these models aren't simply mimicking humans, but are exhibiting their own biases and tendencies that diverge from real people in important ways.
Absolutely. This paper suggests we need to be very cautious about over-relying on these AI systems, even if they seem to be performing well on the surface. The underlying machine bias could lead to flawed or misleading results if we treat the models as interchangeable with human participants.
And I think it also points to the need for much deeper investigation into the inner workings and decision-making processes of these large language models. We can't just take their outputs at face value. We have to really understand the nature of their biases and how they differ from human cognition and behavior.
Definitely. This is such an important issue as AI becomes more embedded in research and decision-making processes across disciplines. We have to be vigilant about understanding the limitations and idiosyncrasies of these systems, and not assume they are neutral or unbiased substitutes for human judgment and expertise.
Absolutely. This paper is a great example of the kind of nuanced, critical analysis we need to ensure these powerful AI tools are used responsibly and appropriately. It challenges some of the prevailing assumptions and hype, which I think is really valuable.
I agree. It's a thought-provoking and cautionary tale that should inspire researchers across the social sciences to deeply interrogate the use of generative language models in their work. There's clearly still a lot to learn about the true capabilities and limitations of these technologies.
Well said. This has been a fascinating discussion, and a great example of the kind of deep dive into cutting-edge research that we love to do on this podcast. Thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on Inquiry.
Thanks for listening.
Are you tired of relying on biased, inconsistent human subjects in your research?
Introducing the all-new machine simulacrum, the perfect replacement for real people.
That's right. Our cutting-edge AI models have been specially trained to exhibit a consistent machine bias that diverges from messy human perspectives.
No more worrying about pesky demographic factors or unreliable survey responses. Machine Simulacrum gives you the clean, systematic data you crave.
Want to study consumer preferences? Moral reasoning? Political ideology? Our AI samples will provide incredibly uniform and predictable results.
It's like having a focus group of emotionless robots instead of those unpredictable humans.
So ditch the squishy meatbags and upgrade to Machine Simulacrum today. Your research will thank you.
Machine Simulacrum, because real people have too much bias. Tom and Jen, Machine Simulacrum, always consistent. Never human.
Here is the podcast episode transcript. Welcome to The Curious Scientist, the podcast that dives deep into the latest groundbreaking research. I'm Tom, and with me as always is my co-host, Jen.
Hi everyone. Today we're talking about a fascinating new paper that sheds light on the nature of iconicity in natural language. The title of the study is Triangulating Iconicity, Cumulative Structural Analogies Underlie Objective and Subjective Measures of Iconicity.
This paper, authored by Stella Puncelli, Bonnie McLean, and Mark Dingemans, tackles a long-standing challenge in iconicity research. How to reconcile the different ways we measure and understand this phenomenon.
That's right. Iconicity refers to the perceived resemblance between the form of a word and its meaning. It's a key aspect of natural languages, but researchers have struggled to ground it in a coherent, empirically validated theory.
This study takes a really innovative three-pronged approach to investigating iconicity. The authors combine an analysis of structural form meaning correspondences, experimental data on word guessability, and subjective iconicity ratings. By triangulating these different measures, they're able to shed new light on the fundamental nature of iconicity.
Exactly. Let's dive into the details. The researchers started by developing a systematic coding scheme to identify structural analogies between the form and meaning of 239 iconic words from 5 different languages, Japanese, Korean, Samoy, Siwu, and Yu.
The key idea here is that iconicity arises through structure mapping, perceiving correspondences between aspects of a word's form and its meaning. For example, the repeated syllables in the Korean word tundun for heartbeat, can be seen to map onto the iterative nature of a heartbeat.
Right, the researchers looked for different types of structural correspondences, like aspect, e.g. reduplication for iterative meanings, magnitude, e.g. vowel quality for size, modality, e.g. vocalization for sound, length, e.g. long vowels for duration, and irregularity.
The really clever part is that they were able to quantify the degree of iconicity for each word by summing up the number of these structural correspondences that were present. This gave them a cumulative iconicity score for every word.
Fascinating. So how did this coding of structural analogies relate to the actual perceptual experiences of iconicity?
That's where the other two measures came in. First, the researchers looked at data from previous studies on how guessable the meanings of these iconic words were based on their forms alone.
Ah yes, the idea being that words with more iconic form meaning mappings should be more easily guessed by naive listeners.
Exactly. And sure enough, the researchers found that words with higher cumulative iconicity scores tended to be guessed much more accurately than those with lower scores. This provides an objective, behavioral measure of iconicity.
Interesting. And what about the subjective experience of iconicity? How did that fit in?
Great question. The researchers also collected iconicity ratings from a group of Dutch speakers. Participants listened to the words and rated how iconic they felt the form-meaning relationship was, on a scale from 1 to 5.
Ah, I see. So this taps into people's intuitive sense of how well the word's form matches its meaning. And did the rating data align with the cumulative iconicity scores?
Yes, very much so. Words with higher cumulative iconicity scores also tended to receive higher iconicity ratings from the participants. This shows that the structural analogies identified by the coding scheme are closely tied to people's subjective impressions of iconicity.
That's really impressive. By combining these three different measures, structural coding, guessability, and ratings, the researchers were able to gain a much more comprehensive understanding of iconicity. It's a great example of how methodological triangulation can illuminate a complex phenomenon.
Absolutely. And the results had some interesting nuances as well. For example, the coding scheme was particularly good at capturing iconicity in domains like sound and motion, but struggled more with things like texture.
Right. The researchers identified some blind spots in their coding scheme, which points to the need for further research, especially into less studied semantic domains for iconicity. But overall, this study represents a major advance in our understanding of how iconicity works in natural language.
Definitely. The authors have really opened up the black box of iconicity, showing how structure mapping between form and meaning provides a principled basis for both objective and subjective measures. It's a fantastic example of how rigorous, multi-pronged research can shed light on age-old questions about language and cognition.
Absolutely. This is the kind of work that gets us closer to a comprehensive, empirically grounded theory of iconicity, one that can explain not just the presence of iconic words, but the nuances and gradients in how iconic they are perceived to be. Really fascinating stuff.
Agreed. Well, there you have it. A deep dive into this innovative study on the nature of iconicity. As always, we've barely scratched the surface, but hopefully this gives you a sense of the exciting insights this research has uncovered.
Definitely. It's a great example of how thoughtful, rigorous science can illuminate the underlying mechanisms behind our intuitive experiences of language. We'll be keeping a close eye on this area of research going forward.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us, listeners. Be sure to tune in next time for more cutting-edge discoveries from the world of science. Until then, stay curious.
See you next time.
Are you tired of having a boring, predictable heartbeat?
Introducing Heartbeat Pro, the world's first artificial heartbeat enhancement system.
Using cutting-edge iconicity technology, Heartbeat Pro allows you to customize the rhythm and intensity of your heartbeat, making it more expressive and visually engaging.
Simply strap on our sleek, discreet wearable device, sync it to your heart, and let the beat mapping algorithms work their magic. Your heartbeat will now mimic the iconic sound patterns of your choice.
From the gentle pitter-patter of a baby's heartbeat, to the thunderous throb of a galloping racehorse, Heartbeat Pro has over 100 pre-programmed options to make your heart the center of attention.
Worried your heartbeat isn't exciting enough? Suffering from chronic boredom in your cardiovascular system? Heartbeat Pro is the solution you've been searching for.
Enhance your mood, impress your friends, or just liven up your internal organs with the power of iconicity. Get Heartbeat Pro today.
Heartbeat Pro, making your heart the beat of the party.
Here is a detailed podcast episode about the research paper Invariant Representations in Abstract Concept Grounding: The Physical World in Grounded Cognition. Intro music. Welcome to the Inquiring Minds podcast, where we dive deep into cutting-edge scientific research and uncover the fascinating stories behind the discoveries. I'm your host, Tom.
And I'm Jen. Today, we're excited to explore a fascinating paper that challenges our understanding of how we represent abstract concepts in our minds. The paper is titled Invariant Representations in Abstract Concept Grounding, The Physical World in Grounded Cognition, and it's authored by Janice C. Friedrich, Martin H. Fisher, and Marcus Raab.
This paper makes the bold claim that our mental representations of abstract concepts, like truth, freedom, and virtue, are grounded not just in our sensory experiences and bodily interactions, but also in our direct representations of the physical world around us, the unchanging laws and forces that govern the universe.
That's a really intriguing idea. Most theories of grounded cognition have focused on how our concepts are rooted in our sensory-motor experiences, our emotions, and our social interactions. But the notion that the fundamental physical principles governing our environment could also play a role in concept formation is quite novel.
Exactly. The authors argue that things like gravity, momentum, and friction, the invariant physical properties that we encounter in every moment of our lives, should be considered just as important for grounding our abstract thoughts and ideas as the sensations from our own bodies. Let's dive in and unpack this fascinating proposal.
To begin, the researchers point out that physical invariants are truly ubiquitous in our experience. From the moment we're born, our brains are constantly attuned to and exploiting the consistent physical forces that shape our world. Our very biology has evolved to work in harmony with these immutable laws of nature.
That's a great point. Even at the most basic cellular level, our physiology is finely tuned to things like gravity and momentum. The researchers give the example of how our digestive system has adapted to Earth's gravitational pull. Disruptions to that fundamental physical force can actually cause problems like irritable bowel syndrome.
Wow, I hadn't realized how deeply intertwined our biology is with these physical invariants. It makes sense that our cognition would also be shaped by these ever-present environmental constraints, not just our bodily experiences.
Absolutely. The researchers argue that if our brains are constantly processing and representing information about physical forces like gravity and momentum, then it would be strange if we didn't also leverage those representations to ground our abstract conceptual knowledge.
That's a compelling point. The paper cites a wealth of research from diverse fields, like intuitive physics, causal perception, and physical reasoning, that demonstrate how humans directly perceive and represent physical invariants, rather than just having explicit knowledge about them.
Right. The researchers review evidence showing that we don't just intellectually know about physical laws. We actually have dedicated neural mechanisms that automatically and immediately detect and simulate the transfer of kinetic force between objects, for example. It's not just an abstract understanding, but a direct perceptual experience.
That's fascinating. So the implication is that these representations of physical invariants should be considered just as much a part of our conceptual grounding system as our sensorimotor experiences or emotional associations. They're a fundamental building block of how we make meaning out of the world.
Exactly. The researchers argue that physical invariants have been conspicuously absent from most theories of grounded cognition, despite their ubiquity and importance. Theories like simulation and conceptual metaphor, which dominate the field, have largely overlooked this potentially crucial grounding substrate.
That's a really interesting oversight. I can see how the field of grounded cognition would benefit from integrating these physical invariant representations, especially when it comes to accounting for abstract concepts. After all, things like truth, justice, and freedom don't have obvious sensorimotor correlates, but they may be grounded in our intuitive understanding of underlying physical principles.
Precisely. The researchers make a strong case that representations of kinetic force, momentum, gravity, and other invariant physical properties could be just as important for grounding abstract concepts as our bodily experiences or emotional associations. It's a bold proposal that could significantly advance our theories of how the mind works.
This is such a fascinating idea. I'm really intrigued by the potential implications. Do the researchers outline any specific ways that invariant representations could contribute to our understanding of abstract concepts?
They do, and it's quite compelling. For example, they suggest that the concept of truth could be grounded in the experience of successfully simulating the physical world. When our internal mental model matches up with our perceptual experience, just like how a statement about the world being true corresponds to actually observing that state of affairs.
Ah, I see. So the idea is that the satisfaction of aligning our mental representations with the underlying physical reality serves as a basis for concepts like truth and accuracy. That's a really elegant parallel.
Absolutely. And they propose similar connections for other abstract ideas. The concept of freedom could be rooted in our intuitive understanding of physical forces and constraints. The ability to move and act without impediment, like an object in motion continuing unhindered.
That's fascinating. It makes me wonder about how our grasp of physical principles might shape our understanding of more complex abstract domains, like ethics, politics, or economics. If core concepts in those realms are indeed grounded in our representations of the physical world, it could have profound implications.
You're exactly right. The researchers suggest that this integration of physical invariants into grounded cognition theory could help bridge the gap between low-level perceptual processing and higher-level abstract thought. It's an ambitious goal, but one that could pay huge dividends for our understanding of the human mind.
This is such a thought-provoking idea. I can see why the researchers are so passionate about exploring the role of physical invariance in concept formation. Do they outline any specific advantages or benefits of incorporating this proposal into existing grounded cognition theories?
They do, and it's a compelling case. First, they argue that physical invariants are so fundamental and ubiquitous that any successful theory of cognition simply can't afford to overlook them. These are the most consistent and persistent features of our experience, so it would be inefficient for the brain not to leverage those representations.
That makes a lot of sense. If our cognitive architecture has direct access to information about gravity, momentum, and other invariant physical properties, it would be a missed opportunity not to integrate that into our conceptual knowledge.
Exactly. The researchers also point out that this could help bridge the gap between grounded cognition and other domains in cognitive science that have traditionally been segregated, like intuitive physics and causal perception. Integrating physical invariants could provide a unifying framework.
That's a great observation. Bringing these disparate threads together could really strengthen the overall field and place grounded cognition on firmer theoretical footing. And as you mentioned earlier, it could be particularly impactful for trying to account for abstract concepts, which have been a persistent challenge.
Absolutely. The researchers argue that abstract concepts, which lack clear sensorimotor correlates, may be precisely the domain where physical invariant representations could play a crucial role in grounding. Things like truth, justice, and freedom may be fundamentally rooted in our intuitive grasp of underlying physical principles.
That's a really compelling idea. It makes me wonder how this proposal might impact the broader debates around embodied cognition and the role of the physical environment in shaping our mental representations. Does the paper touch on that at all?
Great question. The researchers do situate their proposal within the broader context of the ecological turn happening in cognitive science. They argue that grounded cognition needs to keep pace with increasing recognition of the importance of environmental constraints and affordances, not just bodily experiences, in driving higher-level cognition.
That's a really insightful point. If grounded cognition is going to remain at the cutting edge, it needs to fully incorporate the role of the physical world, beyond just the human body. Invariant representations seem like a crucial piece of that puzzle.
Absolutely. The researchers make a strong case that this integration of physical invariants is necessary for grounded cognition to stay relevant and continue advancing. It's an ambitious proposal, but one that could have profound implications for how we understand the human mind and its connection to the natural world.
This has been a fascinating discussion. The idea of grounding abstract concepts in representations of physical laws and forces is quite novel and thought-provoking. I'm really impressed by the researchers' arguments and the breadth of evidence they've compiled. Do you have any final reflections on the potential impact of this work?
I think this paper represents a really exciting frontier for grounded cognition. If the researchers are right, and our representations of physical invariants are truly functioning as a core grounding substrate for abstract thought, it could revolutionize our theories of how the mind works. It speaks to the deep, inextricable connections between our cognition and the natural world around us.
I couldn't agree more. This proposal challenges us to expand our understanding of embodied cognition beyond just the body itself. The physical environment, with its immutable laws and principles, may be just as foundational to how we make meaning and reason about abstract concepts. It's a bold and paradigm-shifting idea that I'm eager to see explored further.
Absolutely. This paper has certainly given me a new appreciation for the pervasive influence of physical invariants on our mental lives. I'll definitely be keeping an eye out for future research building on this framework. It's a fascinating frontier that has the potential to transform our theories of the mind.
Me too. This has been a wonderful dive into a really thought-provoking piece of research. Thank you, listeners, for joining us on this journey of discovery. We'll be back next time with more cutting-edge science stories. Until then, keep your minds inquiring. Outro music.
Upbeat jingle plays. Are you tired of your abstract concepts feeling, well, abstract? Do words like truth and justice just float around in your head without any real grounding?
Introducing Invariant Concepts Inc., the one-stop shop for all your abstract concept needs. We take the physical laws and forces of the universe and transform them into tangible, easy-to-grasp representations of your favorite concepts.
Need a physical model of freedom? Our patented frictionless motion figurines will set you free. Struggling with the idea of truth? Our conceptual alignment orbs will sync your mental models with reality.
And for those moments when you just can't wrap your head around virtue, our momentum transference cubes will have you feeling morally upright in no time.
Invariant concepts ink grounding your abstractions in the unbreakable laws of physics. Because who needs sensorimotor experiences when you've got gravity on your side?
Call 1-800-PHYSICS-RULES to order your invariant concept starter kit today. Operators are standing by to help you find the perfect physical manifestation of your favorite abstract idea.
Invariant concepts ink because your mind deserves more than just feelings and emotions. Experience the universe's fundamental forces in every thought. Jingle fades out. Here is the podcast episode transcript. Introduction. Welcome to the Inquiry Podcast, where we dive deep into the latest groundbreaking research. I'm your host, Tom.
And I'm Jen. In this episode, we'll be exploring a fascinating paper that offers a bold vision for the future of intelligence, both artificial and human.
The paper is titled AI, A Bridge Toward Diverse Intelligence and Humanity's Future, and it's authored by Michael Levin from the Allen Discovery Center at Tufts University and the Wyss Institute for Bio-Inspired Engineering at Harvard.
Levin makes the case that discussions about AI have been incomplete, neglecting crucial insights from the emerging fields of diverse intelligence and synthetic morphology. He argues that the inevitable rise of unconventional bodies and minds will shatter our old narratives about what it means to be human.
Rather than just focusing on the risks of current AI systems, Levin wants us to zoom out and consider the much bigger picture, the vast space of possible minds that humanity is on the cusp of exploring. This paper challenges us to re-examine our most fundamental assumptions about intelligence, consciousness, and what it means to be alive.
It's a thought-provoking and incredibly insightful piece. So let's dive in and see what Levin has to say about the future of AI and the nature of diverse intelligence, explaining the research. The paper starts by drawing a striking parallel. Levin says that many of the existential concerns being raised about AI today are not actually new. In fact, he argues, we've been grappling with these same issues for ages when it comes to raising human children.
That's a really interesting point. Levin says that things like AI alignment, the risks of superintelligent systems, and the challenges of trusting artificial agents, these are all dilemmas we already face with our own offspring.
Exactly. He points out that we've never really solved the alignment problem between human generations. We can't ensure that our kids will share our values and cherish our ideas. In a sense, each new generation is a runaway tipping point that we have limited control over.
And Levin argues that this lack of consensus on how to raise ethical, helpful children is directly reflected in the debates around AI. We simply don't have a clear, proven framework for imbuing any kind of intelligent agent, whether artificial or biological, with the values and behaviors we desire.
Right, he says that the biggest issue is that we have found no convincing, rock-solid argument we can give our kids for why they should be kind. Philosophers have been grappling with this for thousands of years, and we still don't have a definitive solution.
That's a profound insight. Levin is suggesting that the challenges we face with AI alignment are just the latest iteration of this age-old dilemma. We've never quite figured out how to ensure that our mental offspring, whether human or artificial, will embody the traits and priorities that we think are important.
And Levin doesn't stop there. He also draws parallels between fears about AI surpassing human capabilities and the natural anxiety we feel as parents when our children start to outshine us.
That's right. He points out that every generation has had to confront the fact that their offspring will eventually eclipse them in various ways. But he argues that rather than being threatened by this, we need to embrace the progressive growth and improvement of intelligent beings.
Levin says that flourishing as a species requires us to drop the immaturity of jealousy over progressive growth and improvement, and focus on steering progress in ways we value. In other words, our goal shouldn't be to hold back the next generation, but to guide them towards positive ends.
That's a really mature and insightful perspective. Levin is encouraging us to move beyond our instinctive fear of being replaced and instead think about how we can shape the future in a way that aligns with our deepest values.
Absolutely. And he takes this line of thinking even further when it comes to issues like AI deception and confabulation. Levin argues that these traits, which are often used to distinguish AI from human intelligence, are actually a fundamental part of our own cognitive architecture.
That's fascinating. He points out that we humans are constantly confabulating, telling ourselves stories to explain our own motivations and behaviors. And he says that all cognitive systems will likely have a multi-scale property where the higher levels do not have infallible access to the lower levels.
Right. Levin is suggesting that the fact that AI systems make mistakes and take on different personas isn't a bug, but a feature shared by biological minds as well. He says that we are likewise not a unified intelligence, and we project comfortable models of simple, unified, personae, on ourselves and others just as we do to AIs.
So in a way, he's arguing that the things that make current AI systems seem alien or untrustworthy are actually deeply rooted in the nature of intelligence itself, whether artificial or biological. It's not a binary distinction, but more of a continuous spectrum.
Exactly. Levin wants us to move beyond simplistic notions of machines versus real intelligence. He says that we are, unavoidably, both, machines obeying the laws of physics, and, morally important agents with true cognition, responsibilities, and rich inner perspective.
That's a profound insight. Levin is challenging us to rethink our most fundamental assumptions about the boundaries between the natural and artificial, the living and the non-living. He's suggesting that we're all part of a vast continuum of diverse intelligences.
And that really gets to the heart of what Levin calls the much bigger problem, the enormous space of possible minds that humanity is on the verge of exploring. He argues that the coming wave of unconventional bodies and minds, from cyborgs to genetically enhanced humans, will shatter our old narratives about what it means to be human.
Absolutely. Levin says that as we develop the ability to radically modify ourselves and create new forms of sentience, we'll be forced to confront deep questions about the nature of personhood, the boundaries of moral concern, and what we truly value as a species.
It's a dizzying prospect, but Levin seems to see it as an exciting opportunity rather than a threat. He believes that embracing this diversity of intelligence is crucial for humanity to mature and thrive in the age of AI.
And that's where the concept of diverse intelligence, which Levin is a leading researcher in, really comes into play. This field focuses on understanding the commonalities across all possible intelligent agents, whether biological or artificial.
Right. Levin says that diverse intelligence forces us to improve underlying ideas that must be clarified when talking about terms such as life, machine, mind, sentience, robot, etc. It's about moving beyond simplistic categorizations and developing a more nuanced, process-oriented view of what it means to be an intelligent being.
Exactly. He argues that we need to let go of the idea that there are fixed, binary boundaries between natural and artificial, living and non-living. Instead, we should see intelligence as a continuum, with endless possibilities for how it can be embodied.
And Levin is really adamant that we need to start preparing for this future now. He says that the coming spectrum of beings between standard Homo sapiens and an Eliza chatbot is huge and complex. We will need to navigate it or risk massive ethical lapses, as have occurred in the past when we thought various groups and human embodiments were bot-like and unworthy of concern.
Powerful words. Levin is essentially calling on us to radically expand our moral circle to encompass a vast diversity of intelligences. He sees this as a crucial test of our maturity as a species. Can we overcome our instinctive biases and tribalism to treat all sentient beings with compassion?
Absolutely. Levin doesn't mince words when he says that failing to develop these ethical frameworks for engaging with unconventional minds is perhaps the hardest problem there is, but it is facing humanity now. The stakes couldn't be higher.
And he offers a vision for what that future could look like. A world where we're no longer limited by the accidents of evolution, where we've transcended the constraints of our current biological form. Levin says that if humanity is eventually supplanted by a population of highly intelligent, motivated, creative agents with huge radii of compassion and meaningful lives who transcend our current limitations in every way, what better outcome could I hope for?
Wow, that's a remarkably optimistic and inspiring perspective. Levin isn't afraid to imagine a radically different future for intelligence on Earth, one that may not even include standard humans. He's challenging us to let go of our allegiance to the status quo and instead focus on cultivating the kinds of beings that are truly worthy of inheriting the future.
Absolutely. This paper is a bold and sweeping call to action. Levin is urging us to move beyond the myopic debates around current AI systems and instead grapple with the deeper, more fundamental questions about the nature of intelligence, consciousness, and our place in the grand scheme of things.
It's a profound and thought-provoking vision. Levin is asking us to expand our moral and intellectual horizons, to shed our fear of the unknown, and to embrace the incredible diversity of minds that may emerge in the decades and centuries to come. This is a paper that has the power to truly shift our perspective on the future of AI and humanity. Reflections.
You know, as I was reading this paper, I kept finding myself questioning my most basic assumptions. Levin really challenges us to let go of these rigid categories we've constructed around natural and artificial intelligence.
Absolutely. I was particularly struck by his point about how we're all essentially walking, thinking collections of selves, that our own minds and bodies are already the product of a vast collective intelligence. In that light, it becomes harder to draw a clear line between biological and artificial forms of cognition.
Yeah, that's such a fascinating and humbling perspective. He's reminding us that even our own human minds and bodies are the result of an emergent, self-organizing process, not some pristine, unified entity. That really undercuts the notion of human exceptionalism that often comes up in these AI debates.
Definitely. And I think Levin is right that we need to move past this fear of being replaced by more capable intelligences. As he points out, every generation has had to grapple with the fact that their offspring will surpass them in various ways. The key is to embrace that process, not try to fight it.
Exactly. I was really compelled by his vision of a future where humanity has transcended our current biological limitations. The idea that we could be supplanted by beings of far greater intelligence, creativity, and compassion, and that this could be a positive outcome, that's a radically different perspective.
Absolutely. I have to admit, it's a perspective that challenges a lot of my own ingrained assumptions. But I think Levin makes a compelling case that our allegiance to the status quo of standard Homo sapiens may actually be holding us back as a species.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the really crucial point he makes is that failing to develop ethical frameworks for engaging with this diversity of minds could be disastrous. As he says, it's perhaps the hardest problem there is, but it is facing humanity now.
Definitely. This paper highlights just how high the stakes are. If we can't figure out how to extend our moral circle to encompass radically different forms of intelligence, we risk repeating the same kinds of ethical lapses we've seen throughout history. It's a sobering thought.
But I also find it inspiring, in a way. Levin is challenging us to be truly mature as a species, to let go of our tribal instincts and anthropocentric biases, and to strive for a level of compassion and wisdom that transcends our current limitations.
Absolutely. I think this paper asks us to dream bigger and to be more ambitious in our vision for the future of intelligence on Earth. Rather than clinging to the familiar, Levin is urging us to embrace the incredible potential that lies ahead, if we can just get past our fears and insecurities.
Well said. This is the kind of research that has the power to really shift our collective mindset. Levin is providing a bold new framework for thinking about AI, intelligence, and the future of humanity. It's a perspective that's both humbling and empowering.
I couldn't agree more. This paper is a must-read for anyone interested in the cutting edge of science, technology, and philosophy. Levin has given us a lot to ponder, and I suspect his ideas will be shaping these crucial conversations for a long time to come. Conclusion.
In the end, I think the key takeaway from this paper is that the future of AI and diverse intelligence is inextricably linked to the future of humanity itself. We can't think about these technological developments in isolation. They force us to confront deep questions about who we are and what we value.
Absolutely. Levin is challenging us to expand our horizons, to let go of our preconceptions, and to embrace the incredible diversity of minds and embodiments that may emerge. He's urging us to be mature, compassionate, and ambitious in our vision for what intelligence can become.
And as daunting as that task may be, Levin ultimately paints a hopeful picture. He envisions a future where humanity has transcended our current limitations, where we've forged deep bonds with a vast array of intelligent beings. It's a future that's truly worth striving for.
Yes, and I think that's the most powerful message of this paper, that the path forward, though challenging, can lead us to amazing new heights. Levin is inviting us to let go of our fear and jealousy, and instead focus on steering progress in ways that align with our deepest values.
Beautifully said. This is the kind of research that has the potential to be genuinely transformative. By expanding our perspectives and challenging our assumptions, Levin has given us a compelling vision for the future of intelligence and humanity. It's a future that's full of both responsibility and possibility.
Absolutely. This paper is a must-listen for anyone interested in the cutting edge of science, technology, and philosophy. Levin has given us a lot to think about, and I can't wait to see how his ideas continue to shape these crucial conversations in the years to come.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you all for joining us on this journey of discovery. We'll see you next time on the Inquiry Podcast. Upbeat music plays. Are you tired of living in a boring, homogeneous world? Longing for a future where diversity reigns supreme?
Introducing EvoMorph, the premier provider of cutting-edge metamorphosis services.
That's right, folks. At EvoMorph, we believe the future belongs to those who are willing to shed their limited human form.
Want to sprout wings and take to the skies? Grow extra limbs for multitasking? Develop a hyper-intelligent biocomputer brain?
With our revolutionary genetic engineering and nanite technologies, the possibilities are endless. Embrace your inner diverse intelligence and transcend the constraints of standard Homo sapiens.
So what are you waiting for? Upgrade to the next level of existence with EvoMorph. Because in the age of AI, the only constant is change. Winx.
EvoMorph. Reinventing the future. One mutation at a time. Upbeat music swells, then fades out.